Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. It's the first Wednesday of the month, has been our tradition for a long time now to talk about cooking on this day, and generally with the same guest, the man we like to call our chef in residence. Doyle Moore is his name, and for a long time he's been here with us and picking up things like cooking from different places in the world or different regions of the country, or maybe sometimes talking about kind of particular dishes or different ingredients. We've covered a lot of material, and we always have a good time, sometimes exchanging recipes, asking cooking questions, trading cooking tips. And you're certainly invited to participate by calling in. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line. That one's good anywhere you can hear us, 800-222-9455. This show, made possible in part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, homemade pies by Inge, gourmet foods, cards, and gifts, as well as Creative Crafts, Zimmer Arts Gallery, and Vintage Street Suites. They're all housed in the same building in downtown Monticello. Well, welcome back. Happy New Year.
Yes, absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. So here, I guess I should confess how we put this show together. Doyle calls me yesterday and says, what do you want to do?
Gee, Marty, I don't know. What do you want to do?
What do you want to do? But I guess the thought, I don't know if it was your thought, it was my thought, this idea that in spite of the fact that now you go into the grocery store and pretty much everything is there all the time. Mm-hmm. You can, I think you're the one who said, you know, now if you want a strawberry in January, well, you can have it. But there is, I think some people still like to think about seasonal cooking and being something and it being something that's sort of determined by the fact that, well, at certain times of the year you have certain things. And that, for example, you know, we talk about, roasting winter vegetables. Well.
Oh, yes.
So the idea, I guess, was really winter cooking. Are there really winter dishes, the kinds of things that maybe you think about making now when it's cold? When what would some of those things be?
Well, it really is. It really comes from our technique of how we take care of food. When I was a little boy, we had what was called a root cellar. And I always thought it was funny because there weren't that many things in there, except there were, I find out later. But that's generally where canned goods were kept, and also you jumped into it when the tornado came. Mm-hmm. So that was the root cellar. And what was kept in the root cellar were all of the major root vegetables that were harvested in the late summer. And, I mean, you can eat them any time, but in those days, you didn't have a pound or two. You know, you had 6 bushel baskets of carrots and turnips with their tops cut off, and parsnips and winter squash, the ones which you still now can get all year round. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, they were vegetables that were put away for when there is no growing season, and I think there's not too much growing outside right now that you can harvest, and so it was used at this time. And I was thinking, see, it came to my mind, oh, I really would like to taste this dish now. There's a particular dish that I learned to make a few years ago, and it is stemmed from exactly this point, that these were the vegetables that were saved, and then in the depths of the winter you could then have these tastes. And so I was thinking about that, and I thought, well, there can't be just one recipe or two. There must be a lot more than I think about, and coming from different cultures, because almost all of the cultures took care of preserving vegetables in a certain way. Some of them are salted and canned and put down and fermented and things like that. Speaking of fermenting, I just found out something. Here's a piece of trivia that just knocks my socks off. Mm-hmm. Remember, we had quite a time with sauerkraut.
Yes.
Well, and wouldn't we both swear that it was German or French in origin? Mm-hmm. It's Chinese. I was very surprised when I found that out just a couple of weeks ago. It was really brought to Europe. And the Germans and the French absolutely adored it, and they perfected the recipe more. And so it is now a traditional thing, but it was originally a Chinese form of preserving cabbages.
Well, that's it. Well, I know at the time we talked about the fact that there was this thing called kimchi.
Oh yes,
which is very much like Korean
kimchi uses a lot of red pepper. And not very much vinegar, but in fact, there's no vinegar in sauerkraut either. It's a fermentation of salt and stuff. So that was just thrown in on the side. I want to talk about the winter vegetables, but indeed sauerkraut was one of the things that was put away and saved and used later.
I'm not sure I gave the phone numbers at the beginning. If I did or didn't,
no.
I'll do them right here. 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana, folks. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Doyle Moore is here. And we thought we would, as this is January, the coldest month of the year, that we would talk a little bit about sort of traditional winter cuisine and maybe what you do with some of those things like turnips and parsnips and... carrots and
potatoes.
So forth, and potatoes. Roasting is a really good thing for vegetables. Now, although I think just only recently, and I've done a little of this off and on, but have I gotten clued into the fact, after having some mixed success, that really you can't just toss everything in one dish and put it in the oven and have it come out the way that you would like, because these things don't cook the same. I don't know why it took me so long. I think eventually, after some mixed success or some failures, I pulled out my. We have this book by Deborah Madison, a really nice vegetarian cookbook that talks about roasting vegetables. And I started looking at the recipes and realized, now okay, that's your problem, Dave. You can't do these all the same because it doesn't quite work. So now I've started to roast things kind of separately, and now I find. Oh, now this works.
It's
fine.
Successful. One of the ways around that, if you want to have this mélange of vegetables in that manner, is put the ones that take the longest to cook in first. Mm-hmm. Like potatoes would take some time, and certainly parsnips would take a much longer time. Put those in first, and then leave maybe the squash and the lighter flesh things until way at the end, and you drop those. Except I don't like to. I want to put it all in there at once and cook it up. So as a result, I end up more with things like a ratatouille, which allows all of that to cook it down. You're talking about really roasting vegetables, and that is a neat way to go. The only recipe that I use, or the only form that I use, is the Greek technique of roasting the vegetables. We'll talk about that later.
Well, we have a caller. Let us talk with them in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi. A suggestion for a future program is
yes.
some time to have to talk about vegetables that people don't often know what to do with, like eggplant. It took me a long time to come up with some things that would entice my husband to eat eggplant.
Is that right?
But now I've found a couple. But I also wanted to ask you about whether you've seen the movie that's now at the Art Theater called What's Cooking? It's about four families having Thanksgiving.
Oh, no, I have not seen that.
And they're all from different cultures, and they're multi-generations. But one of the families is Hispanic, and she sets up her turkey the night before, leaves it on the counter. This is California, overnight. The next day, you see her putting a bunch of vegetables and stuff on top of the turkey, but you don't. And she says this will make the gravy taste wonderful. But she doesn't say what she's doing. And I'd be really intrigued to hear what people might do to make, other than just the standard stuff, that might be more southern, southwestern, that would contribute to a turkey. But my contribution to your topic today Is I've discovered it's taken me a while to figure out what to do with arugula. I like the peppery taste in it.
Yes.
And I found that if you plant the stuff in the spring, you have some arugula for a while, and you can use it in salads and such. And then it goes to seed. And if you let it go to seed, new arugula plants will show up later in the season.
Yes.
And the plant's pretty resistant to frost.
Yes.
It's pretty dead now, I think, under the snow. But
Not as dead as you think. It's there, and it's still alive.
Not in service of harvesting anything.
Yeah. No, probably you wouldn't cut any off now, but it's still alive because it'll be right there in spring.
Well, I like plants that come back, even
yes.
if it's not always where I want them to be.
Yes.
But the leaves in the fall were pretty leathery. And I ran across a recipe in a cookbook that we've talked about on this show or Celeste in the afternoon. It's called Saved by Soup, and it's arugula vichyssoise.
Oh.
And I like a vegetable that's hanging in there even after the first couple of light frosts.
Oh, yes.
Go out and pick it and putting it in the soup. Means that the leatheriness goes away, and you get, I presume, arugula because it seems to be in the same family as broccoli and radishes and cauliflower, judging from the shape of the seed leaves.
It's a rocket. Yes, it is like a radish. It doesn't have a root, but it does have that seed, and the seed pod is the same, and I'm trying to think of other things. I think you're right in putting those together.
So I have a feeling that it's got lots of good things in its leaves. So
yes.
And I'm trying to find more ways to put greens in things. So this recipe has a little bit of olive oil and about four onions, including leeks. And you could put whatever you want to in terms of onions, I'm sure. And a medium potato cut up and 4 cups of stock and about 6 cups of arugula. And salt and pepper, and then it uses some chives at the end. And another thing that I've run into, because this soup is a blended soup.
Oh, yes.
Is you can now get immersion blenders.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And those hold up a whole lot better to things like hot soups than do things like the plastic of a blender, a food processor, the plastic of their
the plastic gets
soup.
Hot and swells up and the lid won't come off.
Well, that, but also it cracks.
Yes.
So ultimately it starts to crack and those things are they're expensive to replace. And so you cook all those, you cook the onions ahead of time and then you add the potatoes and the stock and cook it for a bit. And then you add the arugula at the end, and cook that for about 5 minutes more.
Oh, yes.
Blend it all up. And so I wanted to toss it out as a sort of a fall thing. It's not quite a winter item.
Well, but it's close enough. I'll tell you what you have just given the recipe for, which is a little more winter. It's exactly the same recipe, but and I was going to tell you to use now that word escaped me. Kale. Kale you will be very happy with because it just doesn't go away. And it's there all winter. I remember in England one winter we went to this fancy restaurant and so the lady of the house was out picking the kale for our soup. And it's made exactly in the same way, and it is indeed blended and ground up. It's a very easy thing to do. But I was stunned because there was snow all over the ground. Oh, she was out picking the kale, and oh yes, we have it all year around. So think of planting kale and think of using kale exactly as you use in the arugula. But I believe I would add a little bit of the arugula to it because that has such a nice spicy taste.
So does cooking the kale take away some of its strong taste? Because as a child, I was first introduced to kale, and I didn't like it. So I haven't gotten myself back to it, but it keeps topping the list in terms of good nutrients.
Yes. Oh, dear.
It's nice to talk about how to use greens. We're supposed to get more greens in our diet. I'd be interested in some more recipes for things like kale.
You're doing the right thing because you either sauté them and then simmer them a bit greens, or you have them fresh, in a salad sort of thing, or chopped up in kind of a composed salad. But generally, they're just lightly cooked in a broth, and then you either, if you chop them up first, think of recipes about spinach, and then use various greens. Some will be tough, and some will be very tender. And that was an old family thing to do, was to go out and gather various greens. There's all kinds of stuff. Actually, almost any little herbaceous plant in the early spring. I think even dandelion. You want the dandelions when they're very, very small and very, very fresh, and you can just pick them out of the yard. Don't take the big, heavy ones, because then they are bitter. And what happens is, I think we don't know what to do, and we get some bitter taste. Kale will get strong, and it will get tough. But so you would want to use the small leaves in the center of the head. It might be why you didn't like it.
Is the flowering kale also something that's...
Oh, yes, you can eat that flowering kale, sure. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Well, this morning here on Focus 580, it's our monthly cooking program with the man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. And we thought, as it was January and winter, that maybe we'd explore a little bit traditional winter dishes. We started out talking about roasting vegetables. Maybe there's something like that you have a tip on, or it just could be just about anything, really. But particularly now that it's cold, when you don't mind firing up the oven, what sort of things are you thinking about putting in there? 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. I've been talking about my vegetable roasting experience. I just had one. This is a very small suggestion, but it's something I really was glad that I had learned. And again, it was something I got out of this book, this Deborah Madison book, for roasting carrots, because I think roasted carrots are really nice. What she suggests in this one particular recipe is for most of their roasting time actually to roast them covered. Because what happens is that they steam.
Oh, yes.
So what you do is you take mm-hmm. your carrots and you cut them up into big, nice chunks, and you dress them, you toss them in some olive oil, put on a little salt and pepper, and put it in your baking dish with, if you have them, a few sprigs of fresh thyme. Then you cover that and cook it so that they pretty much cook. And then near the end of the cooking time, you can take... What I did was just put it in a Corningware dish and I put some foil over the mm-hmm. top. And then when they're pretty much done, then you can take the foil off and continue to cook them, and then they will brown
then
up.
Then they'll brown up. Well, mainly for a very simple reason. In the cooking process, you extracted the sugar in carrots. Mm-hmm. And that's what does the browning when you take the top off. Plus the fact that they're burning in the fire, but that's one of the things. So you're developing that sugar, and then it's there, and it'll brown off.
And there I got around the problem that I was having before with the carrots, was that I was trying to cook them with the potatoes.
Oh,
and
they would
burn by the time the potatoes were done. The carrots were burned.
Yes.
So now I roast my potatoes in one dish uncovered, and I roast my carrots in one dish covered. And they come out, as Emeril would say, happy, happy. They're ready to go. So, folks, if you've never done that, you might give it a try.
That's very good. I'll continue with that idea, because what you're saying is that they want a little more moisture than you're used to. Mm-hmm. Some years ago, I was in a cooking class of Greek cooking, and we worked on this dish called biryani. It's not to be confused with piriani, which is Indian and Iranian. Mm-hmm. But this is biryani. And the funny thing is, I could never find that as the name of a recipe. But anyway, it's what we had in our class. And I was stunned at this. it was a huge pan. So it's a great big shallow pan that was 14, 17 inches wide or deep, and 13 inches wide. Very, very big cooking pan, like you bake a great big loaf
lasagna.
Cake or a lasagna, a big one. And the vegetables that were in that were, it was almost anything you want, and they were all put in together. But what made the difference was, not only was there olive oil, And of course, a lot of oregano, which is quite delicious. But there was tomato juice. And the tomato juice, you put in a couple of cans, which would have been probably 2.5 cups of tomato juice in this. And you see that raise up the liquid at least 1/2 inch in the bottom of the pan. So they're, in a sense, they're sort of braised in the liquid. And so that made them all kind of, but it wasn't covered, was it? Oh, you know what? You're right. It was covered.
I told you something.
You're right. It was covered over with aluminum foil, and because we had to peek, open it up, and stir it around quite a bit, and put it. So yes, it was first. But you see, in this great moist environment, and then again opened off at the end, and then they were brown at the top. But I think that I just got that picture of the aluminum foil. Yes, well, that was it.
And all there was for seasoning was tomato juice and oregano,
and maybe salt if he would have a little salt in certain ways. But it was all kinds of vegetables, lima beans, green beans, carrots, potatoes. Those were most of the vegetables that were in it, and then. Then you would chop. It wouldn't be green leafy vegetables or anything like that. It had to be something that had some bulk to it. But I remember that particular recipe, and I was thinking about that when we were talking the other day. Hmm. I've got a good recipe that I want to share. This is the one that made me think about this subject, and this is one that I'm very close to. And this came from a grandparent of one of my students in Hawaii. I've always been fond of this, and I sort of look forward to doing it, and I won't do it until winter time because it just simply doesn't want to be any other time. It's the mother called it vegetarian stew. Well, I guess it could be, but it's a Buddhist style of cooking. The grandmother was the one who had the recipe. And let's see, it has turnips and carrots and parsnips and green beans and potatoes and then an absolutely delicious object called aburage, which is the fried tofu. And you can get aburage in town both frozen and in a can. I would prefer the frozen one. And then you cut it in chunks of some sort. They look about like a deck of cards, a single piece. You can cut that up so there's little inch chunks, and then regular white tofu, just the heavy tofu, and shiitake mushrooms, of course, which you can almost buy anywhere, and green peas. The turnips and the carrots and the potatoes. And the parsnips, those four root vegetables, were sautéed first, so that you kind of get a little start on them, and sautéed in a little bit of oil, and then that's all mixed into a pot, and a chicken broth or a vegetable broth is poured over them, and it cooks for quite a period of time. Oh, I think that the recipe I have is just stuff. It's a real folk recipe, so it's stuff. And I have to think about what the times are on this. I believe I cook it for at least an hour. I like to cook it in a Dutch oven or a big heavy iron pot. And after the vegetables have cooked down to where they're a little more tender, And the aburage and the tofu, they're all in there at the same time. The shiitake mushrooms you're going to want to moisten with warm water before you cut that stem off and just drop them in whole. They're so good. Then you thicken this broth with cornstarch. So how thick? Well, just so it has a little bit of body. It isn't going to end up being a cornstarch pudding, so it's just thickening. But then at the very end, you put in 2 tablespoons or more of oyster sauce. And then you drizzle one teaspoon or a little bit more of sesame oil. Well, all of a sudden, this entire mélange takes on this perfume that is absolutely heaven. And it's a nice thick, and it's warm, and all the vegetables are cooked, and it's in this big pot. It is a favorite of mine. But I was really surprised that that's all you had for. There's no herbs or spices. It is the oyster sauce and sesame oil. Those two things with those winter vegetables. Absolutely perfect. Mm. Easy enough to try. All the stuff's available in town.
We're a little bit past the midpoint.
Oh.
Of this part of Focus 580, with the man we call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore, and we thought since it was winter, we'd talk about cooking. Maybe you have a recipe that uses the traditional winter root vegetables, things like turnips or parsnips, potatoes, carrots, beets could be. Beets is...
Only one problem with beets, parenthesis.
Yes.
You have to cook them with their skins on, or else they all bleed and they turn white and the juice is all red. So beets aren't often cooked with other...
Well, that's another one of those things that I think I discovered. If I'm going to roast those, I'm going to roast them all by themselves.
All by themselves, yes. Oh, and roasted beets
are
wonderful.
Very good. They're very good. We have a caller. We'd welcome others. All you need to do is give us a call. Maybe you have a recipe to share or a story or a question or whatever. Anything's fine. There's no rules on the show when Doyle is here. 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. Good. Anywhere you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Downs, line number 4, our toll-free line. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a carrot recipe.
Great.
Carrots Provençal.
Oh, boy. All right.
This is the simplest and the best carrot recipe I know. You slice 2 pounds of carrots.
Cut them across like coins.
Right.
Yes.
And I usually do it diagonally, so I get a longer, slightly bigger piece. But the first thing I learned to cook was Chinese, so I'd slice everything.
Oh, yes.
and a half to one head, not clove, of garlic. Peeled and thinly sliced.
Oh, a head of garlic, yes.
Salt and pepper. And 15 to 20 imported black olives.
Black olives.
Kalamatas.
Yes.
Or,
yes.
I really like the really bitter oil-cured ones.
Oh, yeah, the wrinkly ones.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You saute the carrots in 2 tablespoons of olive oil. A little bit. Turn the heat down. Cover and cook them for 20 minutes and look at them from time to time and stir them and make sure they're not burning or browning too much. That's covered.
Yes.
Then add the garlic and season with salt and pepper and really turn the heat down fairly far and cook those until the carrots are caramelized and the garlic is soft.
Oh.
It takes about 15 minutes and then you stir in the olives and check the seasonings. And it is wonderful.
Wow. And
I love it with roast a roasted chicken.
Yes,
which you can do, while this is cooking. And they're sweet, and they are just, and you have the garlic to add interest, and the olives, and it's beautiful.
That sounds really quite good. And in cooking that long period of time, as I mentioned to David. That does bring out the character of
right.
carrots rather than boiling them to death in some water and
throwing
them out on a plate. Oh, that's good. Carrots and garlic. Now you say about a half to a whole head
uh-huh.
of garlic, then you've sliced it.
Right.
Just garlic sliced and then the black olives.
Right.
Oh, that is good. Well, thank you. That's really quite a taste. Where did that come from? Do you know?
Yeah, it came from a Patricia Wells book.
Hmm.
Her At Home in Provence book.
Oh, that, you know, with the, yes, I should have guessed, with the garlic and olive oil, yes, carrots Provençal. Oh, that's good. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks much. We'll go to another caller here. This is Bloomington, Illinois. Line number 1. Hello.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning.
Hello there.
You mentioned about thickening things with cornstarch.
Yes.
I don't particularly like things with thickened with cornstarch because it seems to impart a flavor to it. I prefer using flour for thickening purposes because it doesn't seem to add any flavor of its own.
Yes.
Is there any particular reason why you would use cornstarch?
Because it's just traditional thickening, and it's faster than flour. Flour you could use it to thicken in two ways. You could make you could mix it with butter so that you have this little paste, and then it won't turn into a lump when you put it into the liquid. Or the other way is that you could make a roux. And then use and have that stored. That's the way thickening is done in New Orleans, is with a roux that is made up of oil and flour and cooked for a long time and then set aside and put in the refrigerator and use that to thicken with. If you don't like either of those, you might try the third thing that is used a lot to thicken, and that is arrowroot. Arrowroot is another kind of starch, but it is a lot clearer than cornstarch or flour. Flour you have to be careful with, because it will give a flavor if you don't get it cooked. And cornstarch, the reason it's used is it's instant. I mean, it gets thick and that's the end of it. But flour, you want to make sure that you cook it a long time. That's the only holdback on flour, y'all.
I just don't like the flavor of anything with cornstarch. So.
Well, try arrowroot if you've not done that.
Does that impart a flavor?
No, it doesn't. And a lot of people use that as a substitute for cornstarch. Cornstarch is a little bit difficult to work with, because as soon as you put cornstarch in things, it has a tendency to want to burn. And you have to be careful. You don't put too much in.
All the sugar in.
Yeah. You don't want to put too much in, because then it will burn. So it's just a little thickening. But, I know. I got the answer for you. It just came to my mind. For flour for thickening, use Wondra, Wondra. That is a flour where they have worked on it a little bit, and each of the grains of flour is separate from the other. It doesn't clump up like the other, and you will not get any lumps when you use Wondra.
Where would you get that?
Grocery store.
Any place?
I think pretty much now. For a period of time, it was gone, but I have it again. It used to be in a round box, but now it comes in something that looks like. A Bisquick box, you know, it's just a box. But it's Wondra, Wondra.
Uh-huh.
And don't go into the soap aisle, because there is also a Wondra soap. But granulated is the word I was trying to come up with. The flour is granulated, and you just sprinkle it, and it does not clump up and makes a delicious sauce and gravy. Yes, try Wondra. That's your answer.
Thank you very much.
You betcha.
All right, thanks. Well, isn't that's what is called, generically referred to as, cake flour?
No.
No.
Wondra, no.
Different.
It's not. It's absolutely. It's main and almost only use, and certainly the only use that I use, is for thickening.
It's for thickening.
Yeah. Wondra. It came out a long time ago, and then it quit, and I couldn't get it. I was very disappointed. And then all of a sudden it came back again. And in between that time, this wondrous soap came out. And I did wonder. I
coincidence?
I don't know.
All right. Let's go to Charleston for someone else here, line number four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I wanted to share with your guest a recipe that I prepare every so often. I am inclined to saving, and so when I cook vegetables, if there is a piece that I don't want to use for that particular recipe, I chop it up small, put in a freezing bag, and put in the freezer.
Uh-huh.
And when I collect a sizable bag, I mean not huge, but it depends on the amount of soup I want to make, I put them all in the pot, frozen and all.
Yes.
And put either meat, cut up chicken breast or beef, whatever I have around. I even put in my frozen bag leftover canned soup that I want to use only one portion, and then I... Anything you don't want to throw away, but it's too little to save. This last time, I traveled for a couple of months and I left. I didn't want to throw so many vegetables, half onions in my glass jar and
tomatoes, oh, yes,
and so on. So I chopped all that up. When I came back, I had wonderful soup. How I seasoned it, you know, there were onions chopped in there, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that I didn't have very much meat. Since I had gone away, I had gotten rid of all things that I wanted to put there. So I opened up a bag of chicken noodle, Lipton chicken.
Oh, my. Uh-huh.
And I put that in there.
That'd have broth, yes.
Yes, and it was excellent. And a couple of drops of hot sauce and, obviously, some cooking wine I always put in it.
Cooking wine.
And it simmers for a long time, and it's just wonderful for winter. And you don't throw away something.
And you don't throw away anything, and you don't waste it.
Exactly.
That's good, isn't it?
Yes.
Then the funny thing was you're going to say, you know, this isn't exactly like I just did. This is better than the last one.
Every time you have different vegetables left over.
Yes, yes.
So, yes.
Well, that's very handy to do. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That's
all
good.
Right, thank you. We just we had a call back from the listener who shared the good recipe for Provençal carrots. Who just, and this is sort of for the benefit of the other caller who was interested in learning more about greens. The caller says that in this month's issue of Gourmet magazine, and I take it that means she means January, there's a big feature on winter greens.
Oh.
So the caller might seek that out, and
yes,
I'm sure that has recipes in it and cooking tips, and so that might give her some ideas about what to do with greens.
With greens, yes.
I have that same problem. To me, greens, they're so bitter. I guess the way that I think that there's the best way to use them is stir fry, where you just barely wilt them, and that's okay with me. But once they get really cooked down, not only do I not like what they look like or the texture, but they seem to be just terribly, terribly bitter, and it doesn't do nothing for me. So there you go.
Well, we won't have greens when you come over.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's go to Champagne, line number two. Hello.
Line number two?
Yes.
I have a recipe that's good when you want to heat up your kitchen, and it's fast and easy. It's a sausage sweet potato bake.
Ooh.
Also with apples.
Wow. Yes.
So you start by browning. It says a pound of bulk sausage. Brown it in a skillet. I use a half a pound to change the ratio.
Mm-hmm.
You then break up the pieces and drain off the fat. And then layer in a 2-quart casserole, 2 medium raw sweet potatoes, peeled and sliced.
2 sweet potatoes.
3 medium apples, peeled. Well, I don't peel them. I leave the peelings on. Sliced, and I like to use the Granny Smith,
yes, apple. Bitter.
Mm-hmm. And the sausage. And then you combine and pour over these three items 2 tablespoons brown sugar, 1 tablespoon of flour, 1/4 teaspoon of ground cinnamon.
Oh, cinnamon, yes.
And 1/4 teaspoon salt, and 1/2 cup of water. And then you bake that at 375 for 50 to 60 minutes, or until the potatoes and apples are as tender as you like them. It might be a little less.
Cinnamon. So we're going to have cinnamon and sugar, and that's the only spices. I mean, the only extra stuff.
Right.
So that's going to complement the sweet potatoes and the sausage. It'll be good and sweet. And then the apples are going to have their own character and flavor, too.
They're tart.
That sounds good.
That's the contrast.
Brown sugar. What was after brown sugar? A tablespoon of?
Flour.
Flour.
Yeah.
So then that's going to thicken it up a little bit. And then just 1/2 a cup of water.
So it's very simple.
Well, it's very simple. And it sounds terribly good.
Yeah.
And 60 minutes, that's not long to have to cook.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very good. Sausage, sweet potatoes, and apples.
Okay.
Brown sugar, flour, and cinnamon. Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I like
right,
that recipe.
You. Sweet potatoes are good things.
Oh, they are
know,
indeed.
That's another thing that maybe people don't think about using very much, or maybe at Thanksgiving they do something with baked sweet potatoes, and that's the only time of the year they ever have them.
That's true, and they come out of a can then for the most part. One of my friends, whenever we have I like to bake the entire sweet potato, skin and all. I like that. And you just cover it with a little oil and pop it in the oven and then bake it until it's done. It gets done very fast. That is the first thing that she learned to cook. And she so proudly served that to her father. And her father said, "This is the best baked sweet potato I've ever had in my life." Well, that just set her off for cooking forever. She just loved it. So that is an old
that's good
food.
Well, in fact, there's a restaurant in Urbana that Mrs. Inge and I go a lot, and now one of the things they have on the menu is a pork tenderloin in an adobo sauce, which is really very nice.
Oh, wow.
And one of the things that they serve with it is a baked sweet potato.
A baked sweet potato.
And those flavor, to me, I think those flavors all work really
That's
really
why I'm
nice
interested in this thing with the sausage and sweet potatoes and apples. Sounds good.
All right, let's keep going here. We're getting close to being out of time. We'll go next to Aurora, line one. Hello.
Yes, hi, good morning.
Hi, you're late.
I know. I have two men that one was supposed to come at 9 and one was supposed to come at 10, and here it is 10 to 11 and they're not here. So I said, well, the heck with you. I'm going on the program anyway.
Good.
I wanted to say about the Wandra.
Yes.
I have started to use it through my daughters. You know, maybe we pass our recipes on, but I hope many of the listeners are learning from their younger children.
Oh, yes.
There are some new products out that are very good. And I use this New Year's Day to make gravy. And it just takes all the hassle out of
it. It absolutely does.
You calm down and you say, well, you're not going to have any lumps. You don't need to get anything out.
You're right.
To get rid of lumps.
You're right.
There won't be any. You know, and it's fun. And it's something I learned from my girls. The cooking I was going to mention was what the woman before me mentioned, and I think that's a great thing to do. And then I wondered how your cookbook came out in your family cookbook.
Well, I'll have to tell you that I don't know, because in going to my family meeting, which was going to be in San Antonio, Texas, I got nearly to Little Rock, and there was 3 inches of ice, and the sheriff said, don't go any farther. So I turned around and came home, because there was no way of getting over to that part of Texas. This was the day after Christmas, and all the rest of the family flew in, of course, except two of them that came from Kansas and one from Wyoming. And they managed to make it, because they came in behind the storm on the west side. And I was coming in right into the storm on the east side. So I don't know. I called and I said, well, did they like it? Oh, yeah. That's all I know. But I haven't looked at it yet, because I was planning on getting it when I was there. But so I can't answer that yet.
Well, ours didn't get made for Christmas, but I said to my daughter, do it for New Year's. And then if we don't get it done for that, we'll do it for Valentine's Day. I was surprised all the interest. And all of a sudden, I heard people say, I want your split pea soup recipe. And
uh-huh.
I thought, I didn't know they like split pea soup. It's just a fun thing.
Isn't it?
Yes. I'll let somebody else have a chance.
Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
Back to Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hello. I just wanted to talk in defense of greens, which
good.
I love.
Yes.
And what I do is I do the olive oil and garlic and some of the chopped red pepper, the dried red pepper.
Oh, uh-huh.
And then put the greens in with some liquid, some broth or water. Cook them for a while. I like to cook them down for a while and not just wilt them, but get them nice and cooked. And I think that helps with the bitterness. And the other thing that really helps with the bitterness that they're really good with is the white beans, which are so creamy and nice. And I just get the ones in the can, the Great Northern.
Great Northerns, yes.
Because they hold their shape better than the cannellini, I think. And it's just marvelous. And then you can put vinegar on it, or you can put Parmesan cheese, or you could put tomatoes. And it's wonderful. And the beans really complement it well, and they really cut down on the bitterness.
That sounds like a good dish with tomatoes and beans, yes.
And you can do it with kale, or I also like with the mustard greens.
Mustard greens. Aren't they good?
I love them.
Yeah, I don't do anything to them. I wash them and drop them right into a wok and and cook them down, you know. Just I don't put anything else in them except olive oil. They're cooked in olive oil and onions.
Sounds yummy.
It's pretty tasty.
I'll have to try it with the onion.
When you're doing that, then add some pepper.
Pepper.
Mm-hmm.
Black pepper.
Black pepper.
Okay.
That does it.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. Well, while we have a couple of minutes here, I just want to share something with you and the other listeners I got from my mom. She's a big fan of yours. And when I was there at Christmas time, she gave me this little clipping from an old issue of Country Living magazine because she apparently had heard us at some time talking about grunts and slubs and all those
things. Oh, yes.
This is one of those columns where people write in with questions. It's titled Ask Jane Doe, which is spelled D-O-U-G-H. So Jane Doe, someone wrote in and wanted to know what the difference is between a cobbler, a brown Betty, a crisp, a pan dowdy, a buckle, a slump, and a grunt. And so says Jane Doe, although all these desserts contain fruit, their toppings, bases, and methods of preparation differ. A cobbler is a spiced, sweetened fruit mixture topped with a biscuit batter and then baked. When you invert the cobbler after baking, you have a slump. A grunt is similar to the cobbler, but it's steamed rather than baked, resulting in a biscuit topping that's thick and gooey rather than crisp. A brown Betty features a layer of sweetened fruit between a crumb-based top and bottom, whereas a mixture of flour, butter, and spices tops the fruit in a crisp. A pan dowdy is a double-crusted deep-dish pie with rich fruit filling that contains cream. A buckle has a bottom of fruit, a middle of cake, and a crisp topping.
Hey, don't throw that away.
So there you have. Well,
we're going to use that. Well, that is a question.
That's everything Jane Doe knows about all these things. I know we've talked about this on past shows. That there are all these basic ways of taking fruit and making a baked thing with it with various kinds of crusts and toppings and different things.
The only thing Jane has left out of there is that some of those are very regional, and you may not get them done in Kansas City. You know, they'll be somewhere way up in the northern part of Maine, and they'll be traditional to use it that way. And since I don't come from those cultures, I didn't know all those answers. Well, I do now. Well, thank your mother.
Okay, thanks, Mom. We'll have to stop because we're out of time.
Well, we could just go on into the next
one. I think we better not.
Okay.
But next month, you come back, we'll do it again.
Okay.
The man would like to call our chef in residence.
Be here in February.
Doyle Moore.